Chapter 9. Brother Anselm and the Atheist. The Major followed Brother Anselm through the grounds. The monk walked quickly and seemed almost to have forgotten his presence. As they entered the garden, it became apparent that trouble of some kind had already begun. A high-pitched voice was audible. They came into the open of the lawn. Under the trees at the other end, the Atheist was standing, back to them in a nonchalant attitude, surveying the cripple who was flushed with anger. He was plainly resenting something the Atheist had said.
"You go and take your lies with you. They're not wanted here. He knows a darn sight more about religion than you do. You—"
"Good afternoon," said Brother Anselm. The Atheist wheeled round. For a fraction of a second he was nonplussed, but no more.
"Good afternoon," and he held out his hand.
Brother Anselm did not notice it. His look was on the cripple. There was a strained silence. The Major blew his nose.
"Perhaps," Brother Anselm turned to the Atheist, "perhaps you would be wiser to go."
An unpleasant glint appeared in the other's eyes.
"Thank you for your courteous suggestion."
"And you for your courteous intrusion," replied the monk.
The Atheist hesitated. His departure would be an acknowledgement of defeat. It would make him look an utter fool in the Major's eyes.
He assumed indifference.
"Oh, well, I have no desire to trespass on anybody's preserves, and of course your neophyte in religion requires careful protection. I always understood hothouse treatment was the best. I suppose religion is too fragile to be exposed to the breath of criticism."
"Don't imagine," said Brother Anselm unruffled, "that my suggestion indicated any fear for my neophyte's religion. I should say, from what I heard, that he is quite capable of looking after it himself. If by criticism you mean your own lying arguments, may I remind you that you train yourself to the fingertips in those arguments, and then take a mean advantage of those who have not even studied them. You deliberately schemed to work off your stuff on him in my absence. However, I am here now, if you wish me to deal with you."
The Atheist just managed to check his anger.
"Am I to understand that you withdraw your suggestion that I should go? You would like to—"
"I never suggested you should go. I said you would be wiser to go." The other failed to appreciate the significance of the remark, but instead saw a chance of saving his pride, also of humiliating the monk. He would stop, and, yes, a monk would be easy. He would be gracious.
"I must ask your pardon for misunderstanding you. I don't wish for any unpleasantness myself. May I remark that you misjudged me in supposing that I reserve myself for neophytes? Let me put to you what I was saying to your friend."
Brother Anselm turned to the Major. "I must apologize for inflicting this on you. I have given this gentleman a chance to leave. Since he refuses his chance, I shall take mine of letting him know exactly what I think of him." He turned back to the Atheist. "Please don't think that I am going to enter into an argument with you, at any rate, of the kind you are hoping for. It would be a waste of breath. You hate religion, and you hate God. I doubt if you even believe your own lies against his existence. You pay too much attention to him to disbelieve in him. You hate him too much. Men don't hate what doesn't exist."
This was the reverse of what the Atheist wanted. He had hoped to draw the monk, and then make him look foolish by ridiculing his arguments. Instead, he was being lashed with scorn. He flared out.
"You're infernally rude, sir. I didn't stay here to be insulted."
"You are at liberty to go whenever you like. That's the way, across the fields."
The Atheist looked at the others. The Major was lighting a cigarette uncomfortably, the cripple watching Brother Anselm. He felt maddened at being humiliated before them, exasperated by his inability to get to grips with the monk. If he went now, it would be like a whipped cur slinking off. No, he couldn't.
"Very well," said Brother Anselm. "You choose to stay. So you pretend that I am insulting you. I wish I were. Unfortunately, I know you better than you are aware of. You deserve far more than you are getting. You deserve no mercy. I have in my mind at this moment the havoc you have worked with your glib tongue. The crime of murder is light compared with the perpetual crime in which you are engaged. A murderer of bodies is harmless compared with a murderer of souls. Your life is one long endeavor to strangle religion in every soul that you can. That is how you work off your venom against the God who made you."
"You—"
Fury had mastered the Atheist now. He forgot a momentary bewilderment of the monk's knowledge of him.
"You and your God! Show me your God, and don't fling him at me until you can. Fetch him from his heaven. You priests find it convenient to keep him up there, out of sight. You're wise. He's safer there. You can excuse his silence when he's far away. Conceal his abstinence, can't you?"
The sneer failed to affect Brother Anselm. He had himself well in hand. He continued in the same deliberate way. Yes, my friend, God is silent to you, and such is you. He is absent from you. You don't want him. You would hardly expect him to force himself upon you as you force your hatred of him upon others. He treats even his enemies with courtesy.
Words, mere words. You and such as you.
Really? And what about the world? Does he condescend to give it a sign of his presence?
Would you condescend to notice if he did? Said the monk.
So he keeps in his heaven. He never gives a sign. We never show you God?
Indeed.
Have you ever heard of the Incarnation?
When he does the very thing you defy him to do, you refuse to believe it. You ask for a sign of his presence. When he gives one, you call it a fable. You challenge us to show him. The Catholic Church has been doing so for 2,000 years. You scoff at his silence. When he speaks, you deride his revelation. You won't have his incarnation.
Very well. If you can conceive of any better way in which God could show himself than by becoming man, any better way of speaking than through human lips, any better way of being present to the world and in human form, if you can, would you suggest it?
Brother Anselm waited. No answer came. The atheist looked about, irresolutely.
You have no suggestion to offer? You still choose to stay?
The monk resumed in the same level tone. Very well. I've more for you. You said something about us excusing God's silence. Do you think we need to? Do you think God is silent to us Catholics? Do you think all our millions have no experience of God? Do you suppose that all the scientists and philosophers, the great thinkers of the world, who have been and are Catholics today, do you suppose they are all so many victims of priestcraft, terrified by medieval moonshine, blindly believing in a God they never know? Do you think that we could assent to the mysteries of our faith if God were silent to our souls? Do you know that God is personally present to each one of us as a personal God of love? If I could summon all our legions from the ages of the past, they would thunder back in unison the truth of what I say.
The atheist found his tongue again.
Delightful credulity! Do you expect me to believe this childish nonsense?
Scarcely. You are not fit to believe it. I am telling you what we believe.
You may believe what you like. Your personal God of love won't stir a finger when it comes to the test. When you suffer, when disease and pain get hold of you, you may pray at him, then, until you are black in the face. Your God has a wonderful way of showing his love.
The cripple suddenly fired out. You leave God's love alone. He can love a rotter like me. I know that much, or I couldn't carry on. Yes, I'm carrying on in spite of you.
So that was why he had lost his hold on the cripple, thought the atheist. It was not merely the monk who had done it. The cripple himself had decided against him. It roused his malice even further. He hated failing.
Your susceptibility to superstition is contemptible.
Also your spite, said Brother Anselm. So you imagine us whining and squirming before God to be released from pain and suffering, and God taking no notice. You fling that at us for the folly of trusting his love? Would you believe me if I said that we don't expect him to make things easy for us? We don't. We expect pain and suffering.
I always thought Christians were fools.
And you implied that God does not evidence his love for us. Are you or we the ones to judge of that? Do you think we could serve others for the love of God, as we do, if God did not first love us, if we didn't know it?
Have you ever heard of the crucifixion?
You may keep your religion to yourself. To yourself, do you hear?
You needn't shout at me. I am not deaf, replied Brother Anselm. I shall not keep my religion to myself. My religion is my answer to you. You shall know why we love God, and you shall know God's love for us.
Do you see this crucifix I wear? Do you know what that means?
Yes, look at it. That is why we love God, and that is God's love for us. That is why we expect pain and suffering.
I said you could keep your religion to yourself.
I know. I heard you. I am not surprised. The very naming of the cross is repugnant to you. You are afraid of it. It proclaims you and your kind for what you are. Liars. You profess to ask for a sign of a God of love. When God reveals on the cross his infinite love for you, you deny it. You fling it back in his face, and you spit on your crucified Savior.
Brother Anselm paused.
He then went up close to the atheist and looked him square in the eyes.
It was open war now between two powerful personalities. The monk was the calmer. The atheist was breathing hard, clenching and unclenching his fingers in a state of nervous hesitancy. "That is all I am going to say to you now. I have said it that you may know whom you libel. I have also said it that you may know yourself and what you are and your own vileness and your dirty work."
"Damn you, you bloody monk!"
"No, you don't," said Brother Anselm, catching him by the wrist. The atheist had tried to strike him. The major sprang up to interfere. Brother Anselm, however, seemed capable of looking after himself. He loosed his grip, and the other's arm dropped. The major felt something must be done. He went up to the atheist and led him a few yards away.
"Take my advice and go. It's no good. You're making a fool of yourself."
For a moment, the atheist stood there, angrily conscious that he had lost all semblance of dignity. Then suddenly he whipped round and walked off. The abrupt climax left the other speechless, staring after the retreating figure. The major, after a while, lit a cigarette. His hands were trembling.
"It's not my business, but why did you go at him like that?"
"I'm sorry, you two," Brother Anselm replied. "There was nothing else for it. Nothing else could have any effect on him but a moral horsewhipping. I hated doing it, but his only chance is to realize what he is." There was no suggestion of triumph, more of sadness.
"Queer thing, religion," said the major. "Devilish queer. So that's why you weren't fond of him in the war. Over religion."
The cripple roused himself.
"Was it in the war you knew him?"
"It was," replied Brother Anselm. "He was in the same battery as myself. He's forgotten me, though."
"Good gracious! That was it?"
The cripple thought for a moment.
"I see now."
"There's something else you don't know yet," said the major.
"What's that?" asked the cripple.
"Brother Anselm was my battery doc."
The cripple slowly took it in.
"Well, I'm hanged."
"I'd very much like to tell you something more about him."
"There'll be trouble if you do." The monk stopped him just in time. The cripple looked curious, but refrained from asking questions.
"So you were all three in the same battery. What a rum world."
"Mighty rum," said the major. "And you think it rummier still if this villain of a monk would let me speak?"
He laid his hand affectionately on Brother Anselm's shoulder.